Could the FAA's Next Generation Air Traffic Control System allow more runways at existing airports? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. And we talked to Bob because Bob has a very interesting point of view on many of the topics that interest our listeners on Aero News, and among them being the privatization side of things. Privatization has received sort of a bad name because of its association, I think, with the user fee debate.
Right.
But it is something that we should really look at as its own topic when these things come up, because it may be very, very appealing to general aviation in many specific situations. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
You recently wrote in your newsletter about the idea that JFK could benefit from new technology in a very interesting way, in that the new technology that allows closer spacing might also allow a third parallel runway at JFK. Would you tell us more about that idea?
Sure. There's an increasing amount of research going on under the rubric of next gen, the revamping air traffic control with much more precision information. And one of the things that will make possible is closely spaced parallel runway operations that can operate with essentially VFR capacity under IFR type low visibility conditions. And that means that not only could the 750 feet apart parallel runways at San Francisco airport operate when they have low visibility conditions, just about as many operations per hour as they do in clear weather conditions, but you could pave down the middle at airports like JFK. In mm-hmm. other words, the spacing between the two parallel runways, which I think are four left and right, is such that you could put another parallel in between the two and have this marvelous expansion of runway capacity. Once we have planes all equipped with ADS-B and RNP type technology. So I mean, it's not something we can do tomorrow because the planes aren't equipped, and neither is the ground equipment in place. The ground equipment could be in place within 5 years, but until you have the equipage of the planes using JFK or SFO, it won't be practical to do that. But the good news is that constraints that we thought were immutable, like you have to have the runways 4,500 feet apart for parallel IFR operations, isn't necessarily true. It ain't necessarily so, as Gershwin once wrote. Technology means that we could do a lot better.
Now, one of your other recent comments was that we really need to start planning. If you're in airport management these days, you really need to start planning now for things that will be possible under new technologies 10 years down the road, because it takes 10 years in a lot of cases to get a new runway built.
At any of the large, what the FAA calls OEP airports,
right.
That are the critical ones that handle the 75% of all the passenger capacity, 10 years is very optimistic.
All right.
Realistically, you're probably looking at more like 15 to 20 years from the initial planning to cutting the ribbon on opening day of a new runway. And so, if all goes well with next gen implementation, I mean, they're targeting a 20-year phase in. By which point most of these new capabilities should be here. The planes mostly should be equipped. The equipment, the backup ELORAN that allows us to rely on GPS under ordinary circumstances for very precision navigation,
mm-hmm.
Will all be the place. We'll have an expanded constellation of GPS satellites and probably the European Galileo satellites as well for additional signals. So in that time frame, we should not be looking, sort of marching forward into the future of airport planning, looking in the rearview mirror at the way things used to be in the 20th century. We need to look at how they're going to be in 2025 when all this wonderful technology is here.
Well,
take advantage of it.
You mentioned that rollout time frame. I'm a little frustrated looking at the FAA's plans at this point, because it appears that by the time Next Gen's fully implemented, will be just in line behind Indonesia and Nepal in getting it done.
You've got a very good point there, and I've been writing about that also. I'm very frustrated with the slow pace I mean, it seems as if FAA's deadlines are done by the least common denominator of not offending anybody and not making anybody squawk about having to buy new equipment until the latest possible time. And so with ADS-B, which is everybody considers really a crucial building block technology for next gen, the equipage deadline for just the basic ADS-B out is 2020. Mm-hmm. And that's a long time from now. The ground equipment is supposed to all be in by about 2015 or 2014. And so, I mean, if there were a more aggressive deadline, not only would we have the airborne capabilities much sooner, but with a fairly near-term deadline, the vendors, the avionics, the people that make the boxes that people have to put on planes, would be incentivized by large volume purchases in a relatively short period of time. Mass production brings down unit costs. It means these things would be a lot more affordable if we had three or four times the volume produced in the relatively short period of time.
Now, you're a free market guy. Would that shortened deadline also not prop up prices?
No, well, I think it would the shortened deadline, I believe, would have the opposite effect. Because obviously, I mean, you'd say, well, okay, you have a captive audience. That's what you're thinking of, and that effect is there. But I think we very much know the learning curve effect in electronics, that higher production volume leads to lower unit costs very dramatically over large production runs. And the fact that we have a competitive market here with vendors, you know, vying to be the ones that have the affordable box for GA planes or the more sophisticated box for the airline planes, I think means that the learning curve, economies of scale effect would predominate overwhelmingly. Right now you have vendors hanging back because they don't think there's, you know, who's going to buy it? Who's going to be an early adopter, buy it 10 years ahead of time, and then risk by the time, you know, the last people adopt, the technology has already changed, and what they bought initially is obsolete.
We're talking today with Bob Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation, about how technology might actually expand capacity at airports, the concrete, not just the airspace. We'll be back to talk more about it in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here talking with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. Bob, we've been talking about some of these issues affecting airport capacity and how NextGen may help. We've been talking about our mutual frustration about the slow rollout time that the FAA has in mind for ADS-B. Let me ask you about, you're a free market guy and you study market forces all the time. Mm-hmm. If the major airports can accommodate more operations with ADS-B operational, will there be any role for market forces to push the airlines into moving more quickly than the FAA's worst-case scenario deadlines?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And one of my colleagues in transportation policy, an economist named Dorothy Robine, recently wrote about that and suggested that this equipage problem is a problem for the airlines as well as for general aviation. And she suggested, look, we have only a few dozen airports which are really crucial for passenger handling. It would really be a good idea to prioritize the installation of the ground equipment and to encourage the airports to work with their principal airline customers to get early equipage at those key places where, particularly where there's congestion. And so the idea, if we can expand the capacity through early implementation of ADS-B and RNP, hire the contractors like Navarus to get the RNP routes developed, the approaches and so forth, and give the airlines an incentive to upgrade the avionics on the planes, we could really see some much quicker improvements in capacity and really see the benefits of next-gen start to flow, in 5, 6, 7 years, not in 15 or 20.
Mary Peters has announced that there are caps, so-called voluntary caps on capacity going in at Newark now.
No, they're not voluntary. Those are mandatory caps.
Well, they are, but it was at least worked out with work from the airlines.
Yes, it was. That's true. But once the figure that's been announced is going to be enforced.
And it sounds as though DOT is moving in the direction of landing slot auctions at some point in the future.
That is the direction that they're moving, and I think reluctantly so, because their preference would be to do congestion pricing that you and I have talked about mm-hmm. in the past. And I think that is, for a whole variety of reasons, is the best way to go. The problem is that the airports that they're talking to initially are all run by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, mm-hmm. and the Port Authority has decided it's not interested in congestion pricing, at least at this point in time. So the FAA and Mary Peters really have no choice. They've got the president has insisted that we've got to have some relief by next summer, and so the fastest thing to do was to put on a cap that will reduce the maximum hourly throughput by 10 to 12%. That will give some meaningful relief in time for next summer at Newark and JFK. But then the question is how will airlines respond to that cap? The modeling that really good econometric firms have done, and the strategic simulation games that was run on pricing versus caps at LaGuardia Airport a couple years ago showed that with a cap, airlines don't have the same incentive to upgauge flights that they do when they have to pay a lot more for the really busiest hour landings. Mm-hmm. So they would actually be better off with a pricing system than with the caps. You could achieve a reduction in operations per hour equivalent to what you get with a cap, but with an average larger size equipment and therefore with higher passenger throughput, which the Port Authority would like to see. They're really concerned about a hit to the economy of the New York, New Jersey area. That's what they're risking getting that
right.
with just the pure brute force caps, as opposed to a pricing system that incentivizes larger equipment to be used.
All right. Now, I guess where I wanted to go with this, though, is a second question. And does this start to set up DOT with a mechanism under which it could say, all right, during certain times of the day, if you are equipped for this higher density form of operation in a third runway, we can, we have 50% more arrivals and departures available during that hour.
It does indeed, and I think that also it makes sense that to have an incentive for airlines to, you have a chicken and egg problem. You can put in the ground equipment for this advanced technology, and it does no good unless the users equip, and it does much better if all the users equip or in a short period of time. So you really, it's a good idea to give incentives and incentivizing the users that they will get better access if they equip, and the FAA does its part of giving priority on the installation of the ground equipment to those impacted airports with their serious congestion problem. That is really a good way to go.
In terms of the ability of the technology to facilitate additional concrete, the example of the third parallel mm-hmm. runway at JFK, Is it a 10-year proposition to get a third runway, parallel runway added, or is this something that's normally only a new runway or an extension of a runway?
Well,
is it just big a fight?
I suspect in New York the NIMBYs and the environmental groups that really don't want to see any expansion of aviation will fight just as hard, even though it doesn't paving down the middle doesn't require any land takes. By eminent domain or anything like that. But those who, who oppose more noise will say, well, it doesn't matter that the runway is in between. It's still going to add to the total volume of activity and therefore more noise. Those that are environmentalists who think that people shouldn't be flying, mm-hmm. produces greenhouse gases, will say, oh, no, this allows them to expand. And so I think my bet would be the fight would be about almost as long as if they were having to acquire land to expand the size of the airport.
Well, and if it was just a matter of relocating an endangered tortoise, that doesn't actually take as long as it'll take to develop the science to accurately measure the number of tons of CO2 we're putting in.
Right, right. I mean, these are problems we're going to be faced with airport expansions from now on. I think it's going to get worse rather than better in terms of the process that you have to go through and how many opportunities there'll be for opponents to object legally and tie things up in the courts.
All right. Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your taking the time. I wanted to get into talking about Midway and the privatization thing a little bit. We're out of time. Let's get you back tomorrow to talk about that. And thanks very much for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Thanks very much, Paul.
My guest has been Bob Poole, Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find out more and sign up for their newsletters at reason.org on the web. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you can find us at www.aero, that's aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.